and man-made disasters. All the Tibetans have been killed or have taken their own lives in the struggle for religious freedom. Khenser Gyamo Locho Rinpoche, Khenser Jama Chekchok, Robin Bongiorno, Sally Comer, James Foley, Max Halperin, Anthony Masha, Larry Middleton, Shyamali Mitra, Miss Kitty the Cat, Scooter the Dog, Job Search, Roseanne Barona, John Carroll, Lee Clark, Joy Gooch, Joe Griffiths, Jim Kay, Michelle Matic, Robert Palermo, Alex Schwartz, Greg Weaver, Sandy Rinpoche. Prayers for health and well-being. Kyabje Lama Zopa Rinpoche. Venerable Margaret McAndrew, Venerable Chöki Lamo, Venerable Losang Tsering. All those harmed by natural and man-made disasters. For the Tibetan people and for the Chinese authorities, may the nonviolent path lead to full reconciliation and religious freedom. Roger and Barb Alexander, Russell Allen, Ahmed Alcazar, Mrs. Askew, Lisa Baranski, Jim Barnes, Luz Barona, Narcis Barona Sr., Roseanne Barona, Susie Tucker, John Carroll, Julie Castello, Jack Deliso, Diana Dietzer Chisano and her children, Dimitri Diamandopoulos, Zandian Mondopoulos, Joy Gooch, Mildred Gooch, Drew Granger, Tracy Haas Thompson, Annie Hassel, Kathy Hayashi, Francis Hayashi, Leslie and Joan Inman, Kenny Jackson Buddy, Helen Kasanoff, Nina Kowalski, Karina Lillick and family, Mary Lojek, Danny Love, Tom Lynch, R.M., Tom McGinnity, Sarah Miller, Jose Moreno, Rivera Nielsen, Anna Pozo, Deontha Rao, and Rivers, family of Shyamali Mitra. Evan Myrtle and family, William Oliver, Jay Pandya, Anna Papard and many cousins throughout the Ukraine, Ken Roman, Eileen Rubin and family, Ariana Scott, Rosemary Cease, Sarai, Dr. Craig Spencer and Morgan Dixon, Lori and Freddie Todd, Lobsan Topten, Bob Utzman, Frank Van Kirk, Josh Vernon, Dion Washington, Shea Wokowiki, Bodhi the Cat, Carmen the Dog, Dorje and Kadra the Pig, Luna the Turtle, Mikey the Dog. So in a moment, Venerable Circula will be here and to give the teaching, and I believe her topic is on impermanence. And we no longer have the white prayer books. We just have these the gold prayer books, and all the prayers are, most of the prayers are in here, and I'll tell you which ones. Let's see, like, so we'll start with Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra, which is on page 183. And let's see. Where is that? Okay. Yeah. In the center of the page. And then we'll do the four limb prayer. Four measurables. I'm sorry. In English. So that would be page 34. And the gold prayer book. Yeah, it starts on page 34 and ends on page 35. So we'll do those two. After she, we prostrate. And if you've never done any prostrations before, you're very welcome to just remain standing if you feel uncomfortable doing so. That's absolutely no problem. And then we'll also do some mantras. Tara mantras. Let's see, there's one. And then there's one on Jin Raising Myself. That would be page 37. Yeah, there at the bottom. Okay. So those are the three things we will be doing this morning. This one. This one, okay. If you have cell phones on, like I have, if you turn the sound to vibrate or turn them off. Okay. And Geshe-la, a resident teacher, has encouraged us to walk around the stupa, which is that white structure outside. If you've never come to the center before, it has Dharmakaya relics, which are the primary relics, relics such as, you know, emanated from the Shakyamuni Buddha's body, such as the little pearl bones, and other relics such as pieces of clothing and so forth are secondary relics. Dharmakaya relics are primary relics. So just to circumambulate even one time is incredible purification. So it's encouraged to do that. And on the way in and back, on the outside there are also some prayer wheels which are full of mani mantra, chenrezig mantras. So you get, every time you spin one, you get the credit of saying that many, you know, millions of mantras, you know, yourself. So you have, we have a few of those out there. So if you could spend those, that would be great. Another very easy practice to do. Okay, so let's start with Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra, which is towards the bottom of page 183 in the Gold Prayer Book. Say that. Say the mantra three times. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye so. The Four Immeasurables. Let's see, what page is that? On page 34 through 35 in English. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. And then if you go to page 37, do you want it in Tibetan too, or do you want to just in, go to the mantras?
Sure, let's do it in Tibetan.
What's that?
Yes, let's do it in Tibetan.
Oh, okay. I don't have, where's the music? Okay, all right. So let's say that at the very, very bottom, you see Tenrezig's mantra. So let's do those eight times, and then Green Tower's mantra below that seven times. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om tare tu tare tu re so ha. 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 Thank you, Lamala. Yeah, good morning, everyone. Wonderful to see you all here. Thanks for coming. My name is Chuki, for those of you who don't know me. Before we get into the content of today, I always like to take just a moment to sort of reflect on being here and rejoice that we have this opportunity. You know, it's something that for some of us we do quite regularly, come here, but it's such a rare and precious thing, really, when we think about it. All the causes that came together to have these conditions here, that, you know, Don Brown, our founder, went to India and met the Dharma and then brought it back and then asked Lama Zopa Rinpoche if he could start a center, and then all the people that met in the yoga studio back in the beginning, and then they found the basement, and then more people started coming, and then from the basement we got in this building in 2007, and I mean, just on and on. That Geshe-la has been here for 15 years teaching us. It's really quite amazing that we have the opportunity to be here today. So I just like to remember that from time to time and rejoice that we all got up this morning and decided to come. So thank you for being here. So I'd like to do a meditation to get us started. This will be familiar to a lot of folks, but if you're new or if you haven't heard this before, I'll take just a minute to describe it. It's a breathing meditation, and often, you know, breath is chosen as the object of meditation because it's something we all have with us, right? We don't have to remember to bring it. It's handy, and it's ever-present. And so what we're going to do is we're just going to watch our breath, and we're going to count it. And we'll do this literally for just about 2 minutes, just to help us sort of get settled before we get started. And the way this works is you start on the exhale, and you breathe out, and then you breathe in, and you count one. And then you breathe out, and breathe in, and count two. And you do that for as long as you can keep track, but invariably, you'll get distracted and think about the groceries or where you're going for lunch after this or whatever comes into your mind, and that's no problem. You just go, oh, wait, I'm supposed to be counting, back to the breath. And so it's not like, oh, I'm so terrible, how can I get past three? You know, it's just a gentle like, oh, bring it back. And you just see sort of how high you can get and, you know, what number you can reach, and I'll ring this little bell after 2 or 3 minutes, and then we'll bring our focus back into the room. So there's a particular posture for meditation, but I won't go through. There's a 7-point specific thing. Some of you, I'm sure, know it very well. But the main thing is just to keep your back straight. So some people talk about it like thinking of your back as like a stack of coins, or some people say imagine like a balloon's attached to your head and it's, you know, a helium balloon is kind of pulling you up. But in whatever form it is, just keep your back straight, and your eyes can be like open and defocused, like sort of looking off the end of your nose, or you can have them lightly closed, whatever is more comfortable for you. So we'll just sit for a minute counting our breaths. Okay, so you can bring your attention back to the room. Yeah. So one of the reasons we do this meditation is, you know, if our mind is sort of full of some kind of negative thought, we're agitated, angry, annoyed, jealous, I mean, you name the negative emotion, this can help bring us to neutral. It's kind of hard to go straight from negative to positive, and so this is a good technique if you're going to work on something then to make your mind positive, to start with this, to, you know, start at a baseline of neutral. So there's other reasons for doing this meditation too, but that's one of them. So did anyone have any questions or anything? No? Okay, great. Okay, so so today, when Geshe was away, Sarah Brooks, our spiritual program coordinator, has asked that we teach on the 16 guidelines. And so today I'm going to teach, lead. I'm not sure I'll be teaching anything, but I'll lead a discussion on aspiration. And as a precursor to that, we're going to talk a little bit about impermanence, and I'll explain how those two work together and why I'm teaching those or leading those together. So, but just to give a little background on what the 16 guidelines are, in case there are people who don't know what I'm referring to. So Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who is our spiritual program director, he's the head of about 165 FPMT centers
across the world, and we're one of them. And he visited us here in May, right before the Light of the Path retreat that we held over in Black Mountain. And he asked specifically while he was here that day if we were using universal education in anything that we do. And the answer is yes. It's the one of the core pieces of the curriculum for our children's program. And then we also use it on some of these Sundays when Geshe is not in town. The 16 guidelines are a big part of the universal education. And Sarah, our spiritual program coordinator that I just mentioned, she was at a big meeting of the FPMT that they have every year in Australia just last month. And she said that they mentioned that this universal education is one of the five pillars of the FPMT. It's really important, an important piece of FPMT. So I think it's a wonderful tool. There's a book out in the bookstore that you can get that talks more about it if anybody's interested, or I can lead you to some resources on the web where you can get this book in a PDF for free online, or if you want to get it in color, I think there's a certain charge, but anyway. Basically where they came from, the 16 guidelines are these values and principles, and they're based in Buddhism, but they're made in a secular way. So I know that these are used in Montessori schools, and you know, there are different places they're used in a secular context as well. And it was King Tsongtsen Gompa, who sometimes you'll hear his name in some of the prayers that we do. He's the one that sort of developed these. And they're, you know, basic things like respect and kindness and things like that. So the idea is, like I said, for this to cover thoughts that are common in many religions. And there's four big themes, so the 16 are broken into these four groups of four. So the first one is how we think, then there's how we act, then there's how we relate, and then there's how we find meaning. And so today we're going to be in that fourth group of how we find meaning. And really, understanding impermanence is important to this fourth group of how we find meaning. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. So impermanence, we all kind of have an idea of what that means just in, you know, an English word that's defined as something that's not going to last, right? And so when we talk about it in Buddhism, we're just saying, you know, basically the same idea. Everything is always changing, right? The body I have now is not the body I was born with, you know. The thoughts that are in my mind are not the same as when I walked in to the Gompa, you know. I don't know, this cup, while it looks very much the same as the day we bought it, it's not exactly the same, right? Maybe the paint's a little more worn down or whatever it is. Maybe there's a chip in the lid, you know, all these different things. We notice impermanence when big things happen. If I throw this cup on the ground, you're going to notice it's not the same cup that came in the door, you know. But we don't always notice those subtler, smaller changes. But if we think about it, of course, everything's changing all the time, right? And so sometimes that's a little scary. Right? It maybe isn't so comfortable. But on today's theme of aspiration, one of the points I want to make is that if things aren't changing, then you can't have hope for them to be any different. Right? So change is necessary for us to have hope. I really liked some of the language they use in this book where they said that this whole fourth section, that's, you know, how we find meaning. Impermanence is necessary because you have to have a willingness to explore, sometimes experience something that's uncomfortable or unfamiliar if you want to find meaning. And that they call it a path because it takes us into new territory. And I thought that was a really nice way to put it. So I'd like to do, they have some nice meditations in this book, and I'm going to lead us in a guided meditation. It's not very long, probably 5 or 6 minutes. And in case you've never followed along in a guided meditation before, just, you know, I'll try to speak slowly and pause from time to time, so just follow along as best you can. If you get distracted, which again is really common, don't feel bad about it. Just when you notice you're distracted, come back and join in wherever we are. That's fine. And this is just to help us think a little more deeply instead of me just blah, 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 and not giving you any time to reflect. It's just a slower way to do that. And so, like I said, it'll be just a few minutes. And so, again, if you can just sit with your back straight and maybe take just a couple deep breaths to settle your mind. So now just bring your awareness to your body and think about, what is it made of? Think about the different parts, like your skin or inside, the blood, the bones, the organs. And think about how each one is made up of cells. And then those cells are made up of atoms. And then the atoms are made of subatomic particles. And on and on. So there are all these very tiny little bits. And reflect on how all these cells are moving, changing, dividing, and dying. Try to feel the energy and movement within your body. And now take this awareness outside of yourself. Reflect on how the furniture, the cushions, the floor, everything around you is also made up of tiny particles, which are constantly changing from 1 millisecond to the next. Open your senses to the world. Listen to its dynamic energy and observe its constant process of transformation. And now widen your awareness to include the billions of people and animals on this planet whose bodies are also moving and changing. Observe the concrete cities, the countryside, mountains and seas. The sun, the moon, stars and clouds. Can you find anything that is static? So now imagine pushing a stop button. Suddenly the world becomes still as a statue. Everything comes to a halt. What would this be like? Now bring your awareness back to yourself. You too have come to a standstill. What would this be like? What effect would it have on your mind, your body, your behavior? How could you dream, learn, or grow? And how could you fulfill your dreams and aspirations? So now release the stop button. Everything starts moving again, and you've regained your freedom. Ponder the idea, if everything is changing, anything is possible. and then conclude with the wish, may all beings be happy. And bring your focus back to the room. All right. Thanks for playing along. Yeah. Anybody have anything come up that they want to share? Any thoughts that they had or anything surprising? I know it's 9 o'clock class. It's hard to get going. Well, yeah, in the back. Oh, sorry, yeah, if we wait for the microphone, people are streaming and they can't hear the questions if we don't wait. Sorry, I should have mentioned that.
The one thing I thought of when I thought of me stopping was that the one good thing was that I wouldn't be reacting.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, that's a great observation that if we, maybe if we could employ the stop in certain ways, at least with our thoughts and actions, that could be a benefit. Yeah, if we could selectively do it. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Okay. Folks who know me know I love videos, so I've got a few little snippets of things to show today. So right now I've got this video that kind of has another perspective on impermanence, and we'll have a little discussion after it. It's just a short one, less than 3 minutes, if I can get it to go here in a second. I thought that was a nice visual look at impermanence, right? Something that we could maybe get a little more concrete, you know, than just this loose idea. Sure, everything's changing. I don't know how long I have left, right? So, you know, in Buddhism, we talk a lot about using this, if we could really understand that the time is limited, that serves as a motivation, right? It helps us decide what we want to do, like they suggest in the video, and then actually do it, right? And so that's how I see some of this feeding into aspiration. So we'll talk a little more about that in a minute. But I'd just like to open up an opportunity if anybody has any thoughts or any reactions to what we just saw. Anything? So in the meditation we just did, that idea, if everything is changing, anything is possible, does that create any nice feeling for anybody, or does that sound scary, or yeah?
I was just going to say that one connection I made when during the meditation is when you imagine, when you talked about imagining yourself, you know, with the stop button, like yourself freezing, it felt very like you were your own cage,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that in a sense, like the fact that change can be like a comforting thing, you know, like kind of like those beans in a sense that, you know, since we don't know, we could have one or we could have, you know, infinite amount of beans left, so to speak, since we don't know, but
yeah.
I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, yeah, thanks for sharing that. Yeah, we don't know what's coming next, right? Yeah. Yeah.
It occurred to me that one of the reasons people go into monasteries is they can avoid a lot of the spending of time that those of us in the world allocate for commuting and taking care of the house and so forth, and spend more time studying the Dharma.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, giving up the householder life is, you know, I think you're spot on. That's one of the reasons why, you know, that path allows a little more focus. Yeah.
Yeah, I was appalled at how many jelly beans went into grooming. Maybe I should make my shower shorter. You
know? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when we see it broken down, that's really an excellent point that we can look at which are the things we really want to spend the time on and what's most important. That's really a great observation. Yeah, over here.
One of the things that struck me was that you shouldn't really just count on waiting for the weekends, because all the other time is your life too, you know.
Oh,
and
yeah.
One of the things that Geshe-la said before he left was to be happy what you're doing, whatever you're doing, be happy. And that's really stuck with me for these weeks now that he's been gone. I've been trying to think when I'm driving in the car or just whatever, I should be happy driving in the car just because of what I'm doing. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a lovely observation. I'm really missing Geshe-la saying not just do, happy to do, right? Yeah. That refrain of his. And that's such a great lead-in into the aspiration, so thank you for that segue. That's perfect. When I was thinking about this topic and trying to decide what to share today, I kept having some trouble teasing out the difference between inspiration and aspiration. And so I turned to one of our wonderful resources here, my sister. She's done a lot of training in 16 guidelines, and she wrote the curriculum that's used through children's programs throughout the world on 16 guidelines. And so we had a nice discussion about what that difference is, and she helped me sort it out a little bit. So you can say if I've got it right. But you know, to me it seems like inspiration comes first. And then when you back it up with a little more intention, you know, that becomes aspiration. And then when you actually put some effort into it, particularly if it's the not just do, happy to do kind of effort, the joyful effort, then it actually becomes the action that maybe is the change, you know? So in the 16 Guidelines book, they talk about that aspiration is the fuel of change, it's the call to action, you know, that kind of thing. And in particular, of course, in the 16 Guidelines, we're talking about an aspiration to find meaning, right? Because you could aspire to be a great cat burglar, you know, and then use mindfulness to get there, right? So it's not like these things are positive just from their own side, you know, but it's then where you're going with them. So, and one of the prayers that we do here that I think is a helpful illustration of this. So at the beginning we did the four immeasurable prayer that, you know, may all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. You know, that prayer that we do at the start of so many things. There's an extended version of that that we sometimes do in Guru Puja or some of the other practices. And it takes four lines for each of the four. So it's a 16-line prayer total. And so it's kind of this stronger, builds stronger and stronger. So it goes like this. So how wonderful it would be if all sentient beings had happiness and the causes of happiness. May they have happiness and its causes. I myself will cause them to have these. And then please, Guru Buddha, bless me to be able to do this. So just each step of it, it becomes a sort of stronger and stronger aspiration. So I think that's a nice way to illustrate it. Going from a mere wish to something that's just poised for action, you know. So this can kind of sound pretty big, right? Like, may I myself alone make every being have happiness? That's kind of a big thing, right? And so one of the things I invite y'all to think about is, like, someone who you think has achieved greatness, however you define that, you know, in sports, and I mean, in whatever way it is, you know, in scholarship, something like that. Like, if you break it down, chances are they probably took a lot of small steps over and over again, right? It's rare that it was a transformation overnight to whatever we would consider greatness or that something we would aspire to. So, to illustrate this, I have a less than 1 minute video here that I want to share with you. Can probably remember what it was like when we were trying to learn to ride a bike. It seemed like a pretty big deal, right? So, you know, this one just makes me laugh because, you know, if you just keep practicing, you can get there. So, nice inspiration to help us with our aspiration. And I think that he's a perfect example of the not just do, happy to do, right? It clearly took him some effort, but he couldn't be more thrilled. So, I'm wondering if people could take just a minute and think of somebody that they would consider, you know, someone they would aspire to be like, or a role model, someone who inspires them. If you can sort of get somebody in mind, think about that. And think about one or two, maybe three of the characteristics that you really admire with that, about that person. So for me, the go-to person used to always be Lance Armstrong. And then I was probably the last person on the planet that believed him. I'm so gullible. But, you know, I love the determination that he showed. And even with the doping, there was determination there. So I can still hang on to that. But I'm curious if anybody has an example that they would like to share. Yeah, Dion.
My first one.
Is it on?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My first one is Venerable Rabina. Mm-hmm. She just amazes me. It's almost like, you know, that bunny that just keeps going and going and going. You know, she just doesn't stop. And I'm so very inspired by her. And when I get frustrated or discouraged, she's just so inspirational to me,
yeah.
You know, to tell me I can do it, or if I need a knock in the head, I get that too.
Yeah.
I have two, actually. The other one is, one time we had this concert in here, and Robbie Watkins was right there, and he wore out this, it wasn't really a piano, but I wondered, what on earth would you do with a baby grand? Oh, he just, it was, I was just amazed. And he, I told him this, by the way.
Yeah.
And he inspired me to try harder when I'm sawing on my violin.
Oh, how nice.
And I do. Ever since that time, I practice more and more intensely because I know that I can get there.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. So both those examples were people who, by you observing their actions, it changes what you choose to do, right? Sounds like
yes.
It helps you to choose maybe to practice more than you would, or to behave in a certain way, or whatever, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's
yes.
great. That and understand, well, having somewhat of an understanding of the neuroplasticity of the brain,
mm-hmm.
and that I can do it that way. And as a matter of just familiarizing myself with it over and over and over and
yeah.
over.
You can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Does anybody else have a role model or someone that they'd want to mention? Yeah, Spence.
What is that? Oh, okay. Hello. Mine without question. Well, it used to be Lance Armstrong. Just to mention that real quick. But as an educator, it's definitely Malala.
Oh, yeah.
The young lady from Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to put a bumper sticker of her on my car.
Yeah.
My biggest hero, for sure. So.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I almost showed a video from of her speaking today, but I just only have an hour and 15 minutes. But she was in the rough draft. Yeah. Yeah. Denise, you had something.
I have so many role models. I could list many, but the one that pops in my head at the moment is Ben Zander. He talks about inspiring people to enjoy classical music. And even though I teach music, I'm not the biggest classical music fan. But what I loved about his TED Talk was his inspiration for how he sees that his job is to... he loves to see when his students' eyes are shining, he says. And at the end, he talks about how he talked to somebody and then they died, and he wanted the last thing that he had said to anybody to be something that would be something he would feel good about, it being the last thing that he said to somebody before they died.
Oh, yeah.
But then he talks about, how am I being if my students' eyes are not shining? You know, how am I being? And, you know, what do I need to do so that my students' eyes are shining? And so as a music teacher, that was very inspirational to me. You know, if I'm just sort of being there and not really engaged with them, then I'm really missing an opportunity to do something special. But, you know, how am I being? So,
yeah.
You know, if everybody walks out to a place where they see people, their kindness reflected back in the shining eyes.
Yeah, that's a great example.
So
thanks.
Ben Zander.
Yeah, yeah, because if we're all just phoning it in as we go through the day...
That's the phrase I was looking for, thank you, sister.
Yeah, yeah, then, you know, what we're getting back might be similar, right? Yeah, so that's wonderful. Yeah, being fully engaged, that's nice. Yeah, yeah, Pat, and then we got to move on, yeah.
I have at home on my wall and have had for many years a collage of heroes.
Oh,
there are about
nice.
50 people on it.
Yeah.
But the one I want to talk about is the Dalai Lama.
Yeah.
Because he manages to make every individual person he meets feel that they have his full attention, that he cares about them. There's no judgmentalism.
Yeah.
There's no indifference. And I would love to be able to develop that capacity.
Yeah. Well, that's really wonderful. And I think, you know, each one of you who's given examples, they're all about, in a way, how we find meaning, right? It's like how to act meaningfully or how to be with people in a meaningful way, you know. I think it all really ties in well to today's theme. So speaking of His Holiness, he's our next guest speaker. And we've got a video here that's an excerpt from a larger talk that he gave. It's about 7 minutes, and then we'll do some Q&A afterwards. I know I can do it. I just keep trying. Okay, so I think one of the themes that His Holiness was touching on is that things can take a long time, right? And so sometimes it's hard to think in the long term like that, right? You know, even if it takes billions of eons, it doesn't matter, right? He says that. And so that seems kind of hard sometimes to get our mind around, at least for me. So what is your own experience? Is it hard to be motivated over time on things? Is it hard to take the long view, or does that come naturally, or do you have some way to inspire yourself to do that? I mean, it can be even in mundane things like learning to play an instrument, you know, as well as spiritual practice. I'm just curious. Yeah. Yeah.
I have something that I hope would be beneficial to somebody somewhere. I was at first concentrating on the results, on, you know, the end product. I wanted the end product. But as time went on and through much frustration with that concept, I started concentrating on not so much the cure as just take the medicine, Dion. Concentrate on doing the practice rather than where this would lead me to. And that took some stress off me to do it that way. And I hope that that's beneficial to somebody.
Yeah, yeah. So focusing on the journey, not the destination. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, yeah. Anybody else have thoughts on? Yeah, Chris.
I can see that in you. I really can. Because I remember when you first came here, you seemed to be so tense about, and every time you saw me, that's, how do we get there, Chris? Oh, my gosh, you know. Well, I know, but I think it's worth everybody. But now you just seem to be slow and steady wins the race, and you're a big inspiration to me. You really are. So thank you for telling me how to get there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Yeah, back here.
I was going to kind of echo what she said in regards to, I play the piano.
Yeah.
And when I learned the violin, it was a
totally different beast. And I think one thing I've learned is to never compare the different journeys you take in life to another. Because when I started learning the violin, I was initially, I mean, I'm still bad at it. Still a work in progress, but I remember thinking initially, why am I not able to just play it as well? Because I'd played the piano since I was five, so, you know, and the violin was a recent experience. So I think when I just let go of that and just, you know, kind of succumb to the fact I'm going to sound bad for a while, but that's okay, you know, because at one point I had that kind of like aha moment with the violin where it didn't feel like this foreign object I'm holding, but it felt like a more symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
But it was, the interesting thing when that happened was I didn't magically become better as much as I accepted that it's going to take time and I was okay. I was no longer fighting against myself.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you've raised a lot of good points. So a lot of musicians in the room I'm hearing. Yeah. And one of the things that struck me about what you said is that it's sort of the how we make it worse, you know, kind of what Chris was saying as well. It's sort of like the aspiration is part of the fuel, but when it's aspiration that's like, and it's got to be in a certain way in a certain time, that can actually be demotivating, right? Or at least anxiety provoking. Yeah. So really good point. Yeah. Now, did anybody happen to catch, His Holiness mentioned near the beginning what the meaning of life was. Did you hear that? I know the audio was not the highest quality. Did anybody catch that? So he said, it is to utilize something positive, then it doesn't matter how long it takes. All of it is meaningful. And so, you know, if His Holiness is saying, just be positive and then don't worry about how long it takes. And we've heard Geshe-la echo that too, right? Geshe-la has used the phrase, like I've heard him say, well, if you take two steps forward and three steps back, it's okay. And I remember thinking, I'm not sure if he understands the translation because that's a net one step back, right? But, of course, I asked him about it. He understood exactly what he was saying. He said, there was some forward progress. That's all good, you know? So, I think to my Western mind, I'm always doing the math. It's still one step back, you know, but that wasn't his point at all. So I think we get it from Geshe-la, we get it from His Holiness that, you know, if we're doing something positive, then the time becomes less important. It's all progress, right? Because it's positive. Then His Holiness talked about, you know, making the teachings part of your life, that if it's only intelligence, it's really not that important or that helpful. So what are some ways that we can get it from here to here, you know? I mean, can anybody think of how you actually put things into practice as opposed to simply, you know, have it in your head, oh, I should do this, or here's what the teachings say, or there's six of these and seven of these, and I can rattle them off, but I'm still a jerk at work, right? You know, like... I know some of you have these practical applications.
Okay, I think that, you know, like when we saw all those jelly beans that we have, you know, left in our life and so forth, and when we think about what His Holiness said about actually not just having the teachings as an intellectual thing, but to actually do the practice. So I think that what we need to do is that, you know, first of all, there's different colored jelly beans. There's the black ones and the red ones. But to make them all gold and all pure, so in every aspect of your life, whatever you're doing, whether you're at work, whether you're here in the Gompa, whether you're teaching or listening, whether you're at work or at home.
Brushing your teeth,
going to the bathroom, whatever. If you have this vigilance, which is something that our mind is capable of doing, this vigilance of making our motivation pure. I'm brushing my teeth because I'm taking care of my body so that I can be of benefit to all sentient beings, to myself, so that my life can extend, you know, longer, so I can keep this precious human life, and also so that, you know, how am I going to be able to speak words, you know, if people can't understand me clearly. I mean, that's why I'm going to brush my teeth, you know, and then just something real simple, very quick, 2-second thought. I'm doing it for this reason, this motivation. So it would be like what Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, you know, for this. So it doesn't really matter, you know, how many jelly beans you have left in your life or whatever, you know, how many teachings you sort of rack up in your, you know, your dharma side of your life. If you just even keep one teaching, just like the four immeasurables, or anything, Shakyamuni Buddhist mantra, whatever, and make that the core motivation for everything that you do, then I don't think there's anything better that, you know, more meaningful in your life that you can do. So you can do it whatever you are, you know, when you're talking to someone, you can listen to them without trying to think about how to respond to them, or making, you know, little judgments about what they're saying, or thinking about other things. You can be, as Holiness says, you know, thinking that person in front of you is all that, you know, there is in the universe, and to really listen to them and feel that they really have something important to teach you, to say to you, and so forth. You know, so you can bring meaning to every part of your life. And I think that's a way to actually practice the teachings also. You know, not just in your mind. So it's just not a mere accumulation of knowledge.
Oh, sorry. sorry. I was doing the opposite of what you were saying, and I apologize. Go ahead. This has to be our last one. Go ahead, Denise.
Okay. Yeah. I was just going to mention three quick little things I do as a way to integrate that in my day. So one is, after seeing that Ben Zander video, I put a tagline on my email about kindness. So I can't really send an unkind email without proactively taking off that kindness message that automatically goes on there. So far, I haven't taken it off there. So another is, well, you're talking about His Holiness and that humility that he has. So I have, at certain times, practice. Every time I go up or downstairs, I think about I'm not higher or lower than anybody else, with the goal of getting to that, just what you were talking about. And the third one is a threshold practice, where I've gone through, at certain times, each one of those 16 guidelines. And my favorite one was when I was doing generosity. If I walked across the threshold, I would check in with my mind and see, what is it that I'm wanting by going across this threshold and wishing that everyone else who's in that situation at that moment gets that thing that they want?
Yeah, so those are really practical examples. That's fantastic. And we all can create our own versions of those, whatever, you know, resonates with us. I know, like Lama was referring to, Lama Zopa Rinpoche has a whole list of them. Every time you turn on a light switch, think, may I be able to enlighten all sentient beings, you know, or, I mean, on and on and on. There are all these little reminders we could create for ourselves, so it becomes, you know, everything we do, like Lama was talking about, becomes practice. Yeah, so those are great. Thank you. Yeah. So this is the final video for today. To me, this is an inspiration that leads to aspiration, you know, for finding meaning, like we've been talking about, and then even a call to put it into action. So here we go.
Not All right, kid president, you've been pep talked. So we're running out of time. As our final thing, just a quick recap. So, okay, everything's changing. This can be a source of sadness or suffering. Right? We can cry about it or we can dance about it. It can also be a source of hope, depending on our perspective. So we need impermanence to have aspiration, and aspiration is a call to action, to put into place something meaningful for us and those we care about. And by identifying that to which we aspire, then we can get a roadmap. And committing to take the first step is where we begin to make the change. So most of us probably know the change, be the change, know the quote, be the change we want to see in the world by Mahatma Gandhi. And that to me is, I think, a wonderful way of summing up aspiration. So I've got one final 1 minute task for us to sort of sit comfortably again one more time and just think about a personal aspiration. It could be anything that you have. Just to have something concrete in mind. And then think of just one small concrete step that you could take to begin to enact that goal, whatever it is. And then think about, what is a realistic time frame for taking that first small step? And then if you're so inclined, and only if you're so inclined, you could set yourself a homework assignment to commit to actually make that first step happen in the time frame that you just thought about. Okay, and that's it. Let's do a couple concluding prayers here. Rejoice again about any positive merit we created today, and thank you all so much for your attention and engagement. Just as we go out there this week, keep an eye on our minds and see what we notice. It's all a grand experiment, you know. Whatever we try, we just sort of take notes and see if it helped or if it created more harm, and then use that as information for the next time it comes around. So I always like to close with the quote by His Holiness, "Be kind whenever possible. It's always possible." So, Lama Lama, would you mind?
So if you take the Gold Prayer Book and turn to page 246, so let's recite the same dedication we've always recited, 246. Okay. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain a notion of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be free from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Now, if you please turn to page 273. Let's read the prayer for the long life of His Holiness. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. all-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the Snowland teachings and transmigratory beings who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion to the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. Okay, and then page 245. The long life prayer for Ken Rinpoche, Jetson Lopsandalik. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Awatare, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. And then right before that, the prayer for Lama Zopa Rinpoche. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjunasic Taurus doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, saved of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And then seven green towers mantra right below that for the long, healthy, happy life of Geshe-la and his quick return, his quick and safe return to the center. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.